Upcoming on this week's episode of BSD Now, we follow up last week's Podre tutorial with a segment about PackageNG. We're going to talk to the developers of OpenSMTPD about running a mail server, OpenBSD style. We're going to answer your questions and, of course, discuss all the latest news. All that and more on BSD Now, the place to be, SD. Hey, welcome to this week's episode of BSD Now, episode number 3, recorded September 18th, 2013. We're your hosts, Chris Moore.
And Alan Jude.
We got a lot of good stuff coming for you today. Another exciting interview and tutorial, but first we're going to get right to the news. So, Alan, what we got going on this week?
Kit 2.1 has been released.
Okay, cool. So what's new in this new 2.1 release? Some of the big changes.
They've upgraded their kernel to FreeBSD 8.3. 8.4 came out too late in their release cycle, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that sounds pretty cool. And I'm also seeing here, it looks like they've added a ton more support for IPv6, which is, of course, very cool in a firewall appliance.
Yeah, they've spent quite a bit of effort adding IPv6 features and making sure that everything that's in the app is supports IPv6.
Oh, very, very cool. Well, in addition, I'm seeing here they've done a lot of work with security updates. We got bug fixes. We got driver updates. So this is just pretty much the whole shebang. Anything else to add on that?
Yeah, with upgrading to FreeBSD 8.2 or 8.3 brings quite a few upgraded network card drivers, which makes a big difference.
Oh, definitely. I imagine, yeah, that'll bring a whole new slew of newer hardware that people have been waiting for drivers for. But in addition, this is their first release that has a PBI package support for installing applications to the appliance. I know a little bit about that format. It's kind of a neat thing since it'll allow users to install applications without worrying about dependencies, and they don't have to worry about writing a full package management UI within their web interface. But I imagine that'll be helpful to end users, Alan.
Yeah, there's a reason FreeNAS uses it for the plugins. It means that you can have, you know, two different apps that depend on different versions of OpenSSL without causing all kinds of headaches.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely. And another important thing is when user goes to do an update, the pfSense guys don't have to chase a bunch of edge cases now with every new package that gets sucked in as part of it. Like, oh, this syntax has changed, this comp file has changed. This will be helpful to them, and I wish them luck with it.
Yep. And on top of that, they closed 469 tickets and made a huge slew of other changes. We have a link to the website in the show notes if you want to go and see what else they've changed.
Yeah, read all 400 plus of those. That sounds like fun. Good job, guys. Keep up the good work in pfSense land. And next news item, we have a new kernel-based iSCSI stack that just got committed to the FreeBSD tree for 10. So what's going on with this, Alan?
Yeah, so FreeBSD has had an iSCSI target daemon for a while in the ports tree, but it was userland, so that has some performance impact, and it just generally could have been better. So the FreeBSD Foundation sponsored a developer to work full-time on building a kernel implementation of the iSCSI target, as well as updating the iSCSI initiator.
Okay. So that's going to give us a whole bunch of new features where potentially we could even host iSCSI disks for other operating systems.
Yeah, that's one of the cool edge cases that I really want to play with is, you know, if you have a network card that lets you boot off iSCSI, it means you could have a Windows machine where the hard drive wasn't in the computer, but actually was a Zedvol on your FreeNAS box somewhere else in the house, meaning that, you know, it would still be an NTFS format of file system, but it'd be living on top of ZFS. So you can snapshot it, you can clone it, you can replicate it, and so on.
Wow, that just sounds evil in so many ways, but yet potentially exciting. I like that. So it looks like this new target layer consists of a user space daemon that's responsible for handling all the configuration, listening for connections, and then handing off connections to the kernel after the iSCSI login phase. In addition, a new iSCSI front end of the CAM target layer, which handles all the full feature phases. That looks like pretty much most of the info on that. Is there anything else you want to mention about it, Alan?
No, that's about it. It's just, it's not tuned, optimally for performance yet, but the idea was to get it in time for 10 and to get people to test it. So if you want to go test that, that'd be great.
Cool. So what we got next in the news here, Alan?
The next story is MTier has created the OpenUp utility for OpenBSD. It's basically a binary update tool for OpenBSD.
Okay. So this is going to do what for us in the OpenBSD community?
Install security and world updates.
Oh, so it does both the package and world updates? Is that
yes,
the idea?
Yes, and the other interesting thing with it is it uses all the regular package tools that are in base already. It's not actually a new tool.
Oh, that definitely sounds very handy. One tool to rule them all. I like that.
Yeah, and so it basically provides regularly updated security updates and stable packages from a custom repo, and it includes security updates for the base system as well.
Oh, excellent. So next up, we got OpenSSH and FreeBSD Current now supports DNSSEC. Looks like they've just recently committed this last week sometime, and OpenSSH and base is now compiled with DNSSEC support on by default. So tell us a little bit about what this means, Alan.
So the biggest thing in OpenSSH, once you enable DNSSEC, is that the default for trusting SSH FP records changes to yes. The first time you connect to a new host with OpenSSH, you get this message saying, here's the fingerprint, is this the right one? And, users have all kind of gotten used to just saying yes.
Yeah, pretty blindly, yeah. I imagine.
So to enhance that, the SSHFP DNS record was created. The general idea here is, along with, your A record that points host name to the IP address, you'd also publish what the SSH fingerprint is supposed to be for that host. DNS could be spoofed if you're under a man-in-the-middle attack, and the whole point of that fingerprint is to detect a man-in-the-middle attack. So,
but that doesn't work the first time you connect it, because odds are you don't know what that key is.
If you're in a man-in-the-middle attack and you're trusting DNS to tell you the right fingerprint, and if you're in a man-in-the-middle attack, they can fool with the DNS as well. With DNSSEC, the DNS response is signed, and that can't be spoofed. So that means you can trust it now. So what this means is OpenSSH in base FreeBSD in 10 and forward will automatically trust an SSHFP record if it's signed. So if you connect to a machine and it has one of those SSHFP records and it's signed with DNSSEC, you won't have to say yes. It will trust that that's the right fingerprint and let you connect.
Oh, that definitely sounds handy. I'm glad to see that they put that in.
It's the security team's opinion that this is the right way to do it and to avoid teaching users to just blindly hit yes every time they're connecting to a new host.
All right, excellent. Well, look forward to playing with that in FreeBSD 10. And that pretty much wraps up the news for us this week. Next up, we have an interview that we recorded earlier with Giles and Eric of the OpenBSD Foundation about OpenSMTPD.
For our interview this week, we're joined by Giles Shahad and Eric Farreau of the OpenSMTPD project. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the show. So we'll get into our questions right away. Could you tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you got involved with OpenBSD?
Eric?
I'll start. So, I'm an OpenBSD developer, and I've started to use OpenBSD, I think it was in year 2000 or something. It was OpenBSD 2.8 at that time. And I've been using it for quite some time now, and I've started to contribute to small patches and ports and stuff, and I became an OpenBSD developer in 2007. and I've contributed well, a few things, and mostly OpenSMTPD, which I'm working on right now.
Okay, I'm Gilles. I'm a developer for a telco in France. I was a user of Linux since late 90s. I got introduced to OpenBSD by a friend who told me it was a clean system and I should try it. And I became a developer sometime around like 2006, 2007. I started contributing to what's known as RelayD and became got my commit bit in late 2007. And since then, I mostly work on OpenSMTPD because it involves a lot of work.
Oh, very cool, guys. Sounds like you both got started about the same time. So you guys have both mentioned it and kind of the topic of the interview today, OpenSMTPD. So give us kind of a brief overview. What is it? Why was it created? How's it going to change our lives?
Well, it's a simple SMTP server. It was started because back then there was no alternative with a license that would allow introduction in OpenBSD. And so we had send mail in base. And well, that was the only solution for base. And I ran into an issue with SendMail that required me to find a fix in a hurry. But I had no book, and it was overly complex. So I got fed up and started just writing a simple SMTP server, and we got from there.
That's how every project gets started in Unix, isn't it?
Anything you want to add to that, Eric?
Well, I actually, OpenSMTPD was started by Gilles, and I joined later. I think it was two years ago, or 2 or 3 years ago. Okay. And at that time, I was writing an asynchronous DNS library, and I wanted to find some kind of project I could use it to just prove it works well, and somebody told me that OpenSMTPD was probably needing something like that. So I contacted Gilles, that who I didn't know at all at that time, and he just integrated this async library within a few hours, and then I started to hack on OpenSMTPD at that time, but I didn't know the project before.
Oh, very cool. You were absorbed into it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, I started to... well, I did just the integration at first for the DNS stuff, and then I started to look further into the daemon, and I really liked the design, so I started to send lots of patches to clean up many things, and now we are like a very good team since that time.
Cool.
Yeah. So you mentioned team. How big is the team of developers that work on OpenSMTPD?
These days, mostly Eric and I. We used to work a lot with Charles Longeau, who wrote the portable layer. And we get a lot of contributions from OpenBSD hackers and users from other systems. At the moment, the main contributions we get from outsiders are from package maintainers, since we're now packaged for various systems. Yeah. But it's mostly Eric and I, for the most part.
Well, how compatible is it with things like Dovecot, Spam, etc.? I mean, is it already working with some of those?
Well, yeah, we're compatible with Dovecot. Mm-hmm. And, it's just sharing a mail deer and sharing users. And for other tools, we rely on the fact that if a tool can work as a SMTP proxy and can accept mail and reject it in our queue, well, it should work.
Oh, that should make it easy to make it compatible with a lot of things.
Yeah, it's very easy to set up a kind of loopback with any program that just will allow to re-inject a mail in the queue. So that's pretty much everything can work that way, even if it's not probably the most efficient in some situation. But at least you can interface quite easily.
Sure.
So are there any advantages over, or what are some of the advantages over other mail servers like PostFix or Xsend?
Well, I said you asked how it will change your life. Everybody's mm-hmm. life, I don't know, but maybe the administrator's life, probably. Because I think the main advantage is really the configuration, which is quite simple and powerful at the same time. But maybe Gilles can tell you more about that, because he's more used to configuring mail servers.
Simplicity is obviously our main selling point, because we can easily replace setups that would take like hundreds of configuration lines into our configuration, which fits in 10 lines max. Mm. So it's really a nice feature for administrators who don't have to go through complex things. Usually, you'd look at the configuration file and immediately spot if there's something wrong. You can understand, it's like reading English. So it's easy to understand the intent of the file. Mm. That's the main point, but there are many, like, we focus on security, we focus on having a mm-hmm. clean base.
Same defaults?
Yeah, same defaults. We have decent performances. Like, we're not 10 times faster than the others, but we can compare. Mm. And we have a very strict policy on not losing things. We'd rather be slightly slower, but not lose a mail, than mm-hmm. try to be as fast as possible and skip some steps.
Very cool. Well, if somebody wanted to switch from some of those other systems, how easy is it to do? Is this an easy drop-in replacement?
Not exactly drop-in. We shared some historical utilities. Like you will find new aliases, you will find MakeMap. Mm-hmm. But that's not that's a layer above our way of handling things to make it easier to switch. But you still have to do some configuration. But it's so simple that you're going to switch in a few minutes. On most use cases, 90% of use cases you can switch in a matter of minutes.
Oh, yeah, and we're easy.
And you will understand what you're doing, which is. A big step forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have users that send us mails privately to say it's the first time in my life that I configured a mail server and I actually enjoyed doing that. you make me enjoy mail again.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I've had to mess with it, I'm like, there's got to be a better way. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of your work.
Yeah, so.
But. There's some setups that you can probably not replace right away, because we still like a few features that, but maybe we can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm. Are there anything like, specific?
It's mostly that.
Eric?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, okay. We really need to have to support some kind of filtering infrastructure, like Milter API or something like that. We currently don't have that, so mm-hmm. that's something that's lacking. Like, because people want to do at least basic masquerading when sending mail and stuff like that for. And for that, we need to have a filtering API, and we're working on that, but it's not there yet. So maybe there are some setups that you cannot currently update to OpenSMTPD, but in most cases, it's fine, I think.
Are those things planned and on the roadmap to come down the pike at some point?
Yeah, we had it on the roadmap for quite a long time now, but we had other priorities and we couldn't really. We wanted to have it for the next release, but we have to wait a bit more. But it's mostly in place. We just have to make sure that we didn't break anything.
Yeah, mm-hmm. filters are mostly done. We still have some few things to decide. because we don't want to publish an API that people will start using, and then we will break it because we want to change something, and there are already filters in the way. So we decided to, even though we have something that can work currently, we want to make sure we both agree on stabilizing the API. There are a few things with regard to performances when dealing with filters that we want to improve still. So yeah, it's a big milestone and something we want fast. Something we want in the near future.
So you mentioned the config syntax and how easy it is to grasp. Was it inspired by PF, or was it just you wanted something simpler? Or
Initially, I had a different syntax, but that was still simple. It was inspired by the RelayD syntax with brackets and blocks of configuration. And another OpenBSD developer came and told me, well, maybe you should try to do something line by line like PF. And he drafted something on paper to show me how he would see the configuration, and it looked fine. So that's how we got there. Yeah, it's inspired by PF, but it does not charge much code. It's a different approach.
So yeah, what made you guys? Go ahead, Eric.
The fact that it looks like PF is if you think about it, it's kind of it makes sense because PF is a language very efficient at describing how to route packets, and an SMTP server is just a program that routes mail. So the same kind of language is used to describe the routing strategy, and it makes the configuration very simple, and it's not surprised that it looks the same. I mean, it's efficient for both cases because they are not too different, I think.
Our main difference with how PF evaluates the rules is that PF does a matching last match. I mean, it traverses the rules, whereas we do a first match evaluation. If we find a rule, we stop there and evaluate it. So, but other than that, it looks quite the same.
So what made you guys
It's the same idea.
Oh, good.
Sorry, it's the same idea that you have an input and you say what you do with this input in what are you going to do with this input? So and every line described is just a rule. So it's very easy and very clear.
Oh, very cool, guys. So what made you decide to develop this as a portable version, a la OpenSSH? Do you have plans for world domination?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is out there.
Initially, I started making a portable version for Linux and found it very hard. So I dropped and started working on a FreeBSD and a BSD version. I got it a bit forward, and it started working. Then Charles Longeau came with his own portable version it worked on Linux, it worked on FreeBSD, it worked on NetBSD. So we decided to go with his version. And the idea was that being able to run OpenSMTP on Linux would bring us new tools like Vagrind or Coverity and tools that we don't have in OpenBSD. And also, most mail servers don't run OpenBSD. So having a broader user coverage is nicer. It allows us to spot more bugs and fix the issues for other people than just OpenBSD users.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about any cool upcoming features? What you're planning to do next?
filters. obviously, yes, filters, they are really needed now, but I'm not sure if we have a specific feature that I can think about right now. But what's interesting is that we took quite some time to clean up the internals and have the core program very clean. And in the past few months, we could add features very easily. We found that any feature we can think of, it was very easy to just implement it because the core is now quite clean. So we've made lots of progress just because we clean up the code base. So besides filters, which are almost in place, and any kind of feature we want to add, we probably can do it quite easily.
I can think of a few features. filters, obviously. We have done a lot of work to make it possible to use external programs to manage the queue or the scheduler or table backends. So basically, you are now capable of writing a queue backend, something that will store envelopes and messages, and share it as an external program, packaged by its own, without any help from us. And I'd like to see more queues and more schedulers implemented, because we don't rely on locality of the queue with the SMTP server. We could run a queue on a cloud or run a queue on a PostgreSQL server. And this is the kind of things I would like to have soon, just at least as a proof of concept. Mm-hmm. But we have written already a small proof of concept that shows that it works. But something that could be used by other people would be nice. Mm-hmm. And I work this day a lot with SSL to make it easier for people to have encryption enabled, so that it's no longer something hard to set up, but something that works by default and that you disable if you really, really want to disable it. And this should keep us busy for the next few months.
Well, we really need to be busy.
Or anything else cool you'd like to mention about the project, say to a mail administrator out there, some tidbit or feature that you know they're really going to want?
Filters. It's the blocking issue right now.
Sure. Filters, filters, filters. Gotcha.
Yeah. Besides that, no. Most of the thing we want to add from now on rely on the fact that we have filters. So adding anti-spam filters, features and unrelated rely on the fact that we have filters. So this is the main task before we go anywhere.
So if people wanted more information to maybe look at installing this and so on, where should they look?
Well, we have the official website. We have a mailing list, which is linked from the website. It's a very low traffic, so they won't get too many spam. There's Twitter, and we have an IRC channel on Freenode. That's about all.
And are there any specific bits of help you're looking for, if people wanted to help develop something? Is there?
Oh, we have a repository on GitHub with a bug tracker and a list of features and issues that are pending. Right now, there are no blocking issues. There are nothing that prevents us from doing a release. But there are lots of small issues that we prefer other people to do, because it's easy and it would get them a foot in the project.
Well, actually, we are more looking for packagers for other systems. Like if people want to integrate the program in the distribution, because we cannot do that job, obviously. So we have Debian packages, I think, now. Mm-hmm. We have
Arch Linux.
Well, if you want to find the OpenSMTPD in your favorite distribution, just contact us, and that's really what we are looking for now.
And we're looking for people integration to help us with documentation.
Yes.
Also, yep. Yes.
That's about all.
Cool.
Oh, well, great, guys.
Yes, and thank you, I guess.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you guys very much, and definitely take a look at their website if you get a chance. There's quite a list of all the operating systems it supports. It's in the FreeBSD ports tree, for example, Mac OS X even. So yeah, definitely take a peek at that. Thank you guys for being on the show with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Next up, we're going to be giving you guys a little tutorial on how to use PackageNG for binary package management. Alan, why don't you go ahead and take this away?
So I've started up our virtual machine here. Chris, you could tell us a little bit about what PackageNG is there, but...
Sure. So PackageNG is the next generation package manager, right? It's been developed by Baptiste on the FreeBSD project. I believe it's in Dragonfly BSD as an option as well now. And it's basically an evolution of everything that the older package format used to do for being able to do upgrades. It's a lot more convenient. It has a repository signing. It's just pretty good, you know, next leg up on what packages have been doing for the last 15 years.
Right, because the original package system didn't support upgrading. You basically had to delete the old packages and install new ones.
And you had to run other utilities like port upgrade, and there was various scripts out there, Portmaster, and you'd end up running all these other scripts, and they would try their best to do the upgrade properly, and of course it never worked right. But the new PackageNG stuff's pretty convenient. You can just package upgrade, and it checks all the dependencies and pulls down all the new stuff you need. We're using it in PCBSD land right now for building our desktop. That's what KDE and all your desktop environments come down as, is packages. And then we use PBIs for your applications, your user land stuff.
Yeah. One of the issues with the old package system is generally the packages were built once at the time of the release, and then you were kind of stuck with those versions, or you could upgrade from the port tree. And that would cause problems. Whereas with the PCBSD repos, you build those twice a month, is it?
Yeah, we're targeting twice a month. We usually get a new package set out around the 15th, and then the 1st to the 5th, somewhere in there. And that'll have all the latest stuff from the ports tree. Our goal is to basically never have an end user have to go to ports and type make install. And that includes setting options. So if you're a user on FreeBSD, you use PCBSD. If you're using packages at all and you see some options that need to be set differently or make more sense to have on by default, please let us know, because I like turning on things like cups and IPv6 and SSL. You know, just a lot of those things make sense to me to be on.
Yeah, actually, I had a Twitter discussion a couple weeks back about making some meta ports. For example, Nginx has 86 compile time options. So just having maybe a version of that called Nginx-max that was just with almost all the ones that make sense turned on.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I need to speak to Baptiste about, actually. I'd love to see at some point where we don't even need the meta ports, where PackageNG, when it builds the port through Podria or some other utility, is smart enough to say, okay, I got a port with 12 options. Let me build the difference between them, or the variances, and then somehow manage them. Say, I want Apache with SSL, with IPv6. Yeah, that would be kind of the next evolution for me.
Right. The issue is for doing that with PackageNG, or with Nginx, with 86 options, each one could be turned on and off individually. That means the possible combinations is 2 to the power of 86.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to have to find some smart way to do this, or just leave them, come up with some sane set of defaults to try and reduce that number.
Yeah, so that's why I was thinking, you know, you have the default, which has like 6 options, and then maybe a max port that just has everything turned on.
Sure, which makes more sense in a lot of cases.
The default package, you don't want it to pull down every possible dependency every time, right? But sometimes some of those would be useful.
Sure.
But currently the big gotcha with PackageNG is that there is no official FreeBSD repository yet.
Oh, they don't have anything published yet? Okay. Well, in that case, I see on your tutorial here you're using our repo, so go ahead and... pull stuff from there. That's pretty darn current.
Yeah, this one was built on the 10th, so just a couple days ago.
Okay. Yeah, so at the moment we're maintaining two repos. We have three. Shoot, we got 9.1, 9.2, and then a 9 stable. And the reason we have a separate for 9 stable is there's a lot of packages like kernel modules for VirtualBox that you want built against a 9 stable world and kernel. Otherwise, they don't play nicely.
Yeah.
And the hope.
Okay, so all you have to do is in your user local etc pkg.conf, you have to set which package, where you wanted to get the packages from. So that's what I've done here.
Mm-hmm.
If you followed our Poudrier tutorial last week and you built your own repo, then you can put in the HTTP or file path to that repository and it'll install the packages from your own repo.
Hmm. Are you going to grab the digital signature key there?
I don't have that handy, but you can do that. Okay. There's a nice article on the PCBSD wiki called Converting FreeBSD to PCBSD. And it has all the, if you follow just the steps for setting up package ng, then you can, it has all the, sets up with the keys and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you'll have full access to our repo, and then at that point, you know, you can do whatever you want.
So the other thing is the packaging, the database for the packaging system is different. PackageNG actually uses an SQLite database, whereas the old package underscore add utility were a bunch of text files.
Sure. Yeah, you don't have to go trolling through a directory anymore.
So the first thing you do, if you have any packages, like if I do package underscore info, I see I have a couple of things installed, you need to convert this to the new package system. So you have to set the with package.ng in your make.conf, and that will tell the ports tree, if you're installing anything new from ports, that it should be registered in package.ng instead of the old package system. And then if you do pkg2ng, it will upgrade to package.ng's format. So the first thing you have to do is install package.ng.
Sure.
If you're on, I think, 9.1 or newer, there's a bootstrap file. If you type package, it'll be like, the package tool isn't actually installed. Would you like to install it? And you can say yes. If you're on 9 or older, or 9.0 or older, you can do it from the ports tree.
Mm-hmm. Build it from ports, yeah.
So if we go to user ports, ports management package, then we can install.
It's a pretty quick build, too.
Ah, right. You have to do these things in the right order or they don't work very well.
Mm-hmm. And there it rolls.
Just takes a second to compile and then we can convert our old database to the new kind and then we can install and we can also do updates, which is really the big feature is being able to just do PKG update, you know, once or twice a month and you get all your apps updated with no headaches.
It does a good job of figuring out which things need to be reinstalled, even though the version hasn't changed. Maybe a shared library they depend upon has. So it'll pick up all that as well.
The great thing is, you know, it'll notice, hey, this, you know, if when you do Poudrier and you change a make option, like one of those compile time options, it'll notice, hey, I need to update these packages. And then when you do a package upgrade, it'll be like, oh, I see that one changed. So I'm also going to reinstall everything that depends on that one so that they link against the correct version.
And that used to be a big problem with the old package system. You'd go upgrade a libpng, for example, and watch everything else cry.
Right, so we use the pkg2ng command, and now if we do package info, we can see all of our ports now show up, or all of our previously installed things now show up in the new package database. And then if we do a package upgrade, it downloads the digest and all the other information from the PCBSD repo, and then it will offer to upgrade anything that needs upgrading.
Yep. The syntax is actually pretty similar to the old package system if you're comfortable with that.
Basically the same except for you drop the underscore. And there are,
except when you bring up the man page, you do dash and stuff.
Or if you do pkg help and then the subcommand, it will do that automatically for you.
Mm-hmm.
So as we can see, the dialog for ports got a small update, and the libiconv got updated, and as well as gettext. And so while this nano is still 2.2.6, because the shared libraries it depended on have gotten newer, it needs to be recompiled, otherwise you get errors. So now it's going to download those and update them, and it's done. Whereas with ports, I would have had to manually uninstall that and manually... your dependency tree gets all messed up when you uninstall things out of order, and if you don't do it right, it just breaks. Whereas with package-ng, it just works. Right? So yeah, if we just help install, it brings up the man page, pkg-install, as Chris was saying, and it explains how to do it. It's quite easy.
There's a number of other commands, including querying the database to see what's available, what's on the remote side. Just a lot of helpful little utilities to make management easier.
Commands like pkg version, which checks whether any of your apps need upgrading. There's package audit, which goes through the VUXML database and finds anything you have installed that's vulnerable, and so on.
Yeah, that's definitely handy.
I think one of the biggest changes is in the old package system, you use pkg_add and then the name of a file to install that file from the local directory or CD or whatever, or package add minus R to say go fetch it from the remote repository. With package-ng, it's pkg install will fetch it from the repo, and pkg add will install it from a local file.
So cool tip, when you're doing the installation, you can give it different names. So I can say package space install space Firefox, which is great. But what if there's three versions of Firefox in our repo, which I think there are right now? You could also supply the actual port origin. So you could do package install space www/Firefox, and it'll pull that particular version.
Yeah, if you do a package search for Firefox, I think, yes, there's German Firefox search plugin. There's Firefox 23, Firefox Extended Support 17, the internationalized versions of 23 and 17, as well as the Linux version of 23.
So if you need to know, if you know the port reference, where the one is that you want in particular, you can always just supply that. It'll happily resolve that
Pearl
for you.
There's Pearl 5.12, 5.14, 5.16, and 5.18. I think 5.14 is the default right now. But again, if you want a specific one, you can use support origin to specify.
Cool.
If we want to install something, we can say tmux, and it just says, hey, you need libevent and tmux. This will take an extra 1 megabyte space, and we'll have to download 327 kilobytes. Is that okay? Yes. And it's done. It's that easy. Especially for people switching from Linux, this is much closer to the Yum or apt, and I think they'll feel a lot more at home with it.
We've been able to incorporate that into some of our utilities on PCBSD as well. We have a graphical manager for this now that you can bring up and browse the tree graphically. Just click what you want. It tells you, hey, I'm going to suck these in, or hey, you have a conflict, let's fix that. And then it just does the package commands in the background.
And some other cool things, if we say package remove tmux, it'll delete it, and there you go. But it also supports trimming. So if we do package auto remove, it's like, hey, you tmux sucked in libevent, but now nothing's using libevent, and you probably don't need it anymore. Would you like to free up 800 kilobytes of disk space? Yes. And now that's gone.
Which was such a pain on the old port system. I'd go install something that sucked in 800 dependencies. And then I'd get done with that one target port and go, oh, now what was all the things it installed with it again?
There was another port you could install that had its own dependencies that would then try to figure out what you didn't need anymore. But sometimes it wasn't right.
Sometimes it left you not very happy afterwards. Exactly.
So they've done a really good job on these tools.
Yep. I believe Baptiste is going to be at EuroBSDCon next week. So if you're going to be out there, you can definitely come talk to the author.
Yeah. And also, being able to search the repository for an app is something that package add was always missing. Right? When you couldn't remember, what was the port called for that one utility? Like, you know, when you were, even if you were looking to go install KDE, you had to remember that you had to put, it was KDE 4, right? Otherwise you got mm-hmm. 3 or something. And now you can search, and it makes it much easier to see what's available.
Next up, the news roundup, where we're going to rapid fire a bunch of news items that happened this last week. So what we got coming up first here, Alan?
Our first story is a bunch of new progress on NuCons, the new the replacement for the system console, which kind of ties in with our story a couple weeks ago about the Radeon KMS drivers, and how once you switch into KMS mode on the in X, you can't get back to your plain old system console. This is the solution to that, and so it's nice to see it's progressing. In addition, it's also going to support Unicode and graphics modes and bigger fonts, and you know, the fact that most people have an LCD now, not a CRT, and so you have to, not supporting the native resolution makes the text much harder to read.
So it'll actually make sense to have man pages in other languages now and be able to see them at the console. Yep. That's pretty cool.
And I think it also next, supports a 4-up console view, since most people have giant monitors now. Having mm-hmm. all of that be one 80 by 20 screen doesn't really make any sense, right?
Sure. Well, that's definitely really cool. Looking forward to seeing that happen in current here at some point. So next up, we got RelayD gets PFS support. So RelayD is a load balancer for OpenBSD, which does protocol layers 3, 4, and 7. It's currently being ported to FreeBSD, and there's a work-in-progress port in the actual ports tree at the moment under NetRelayD. Mm-hmm. It works by negotiating the ECDHE, elliptic curve, Diffie-Hellman between the remote side and RelayD to enable TLS, SSL, perfect forward secrecy, even when the client doesn't support it. Wow, that's a mouthful, Alan. Anything you want to expound upon with that?
Basically, RelayD has this feature called SSL man in the middle. The general idea is if you're, say, setting this up as the proxy server or the firewall at an office, like a company, you want to intercept all the SSL connections to block which sites people are allowed to go to, right? Say, no Facebook at work. But people connect to Facebook over SSL, so how do you tell? So what this does is all the connections are routed through RelayD by your PF firewall, and it'll mm-hmm. make the connection out to Facebook and get the certificate. Then it will make its own version of that certificate, with its signing it with its own certificate authority, but making sure the expiration date and the host name and all that are copied from the original certificate. So as long as all the machines in your office trust the certificate authority on the RelayD machine, then the SSL certificate appears perfectly valid.
That sounds intriguing.
But it allows you to intercept all that SSL traffic. But one of the nice things it does here is if, for example, your machines in the office are Windows XP or even just an older Internet Explorer like IE8, they don't support elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman encryption. So they can't do this SSL perfect forward secrecy, which basically means that if in the future somebody cracks the session key, they can't eventually be able to crack the private key and break all SSL communications. They would only ever get that one communication that they managed to break.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like it could be useful in the,
yeah,
in the workplace.
So basically what this allows you to do is take clients that don't support really strong cryptography, put them behind this RelayD, and it'll basically, by intercepting the SSL and then making the jump to the far side, it'll be able to boost the encryption. You know, you'll have the weak encryption inside your LAN, but when it leaves out to the internet, you'll get the strong encryption.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Next up, OpenZFS launched, just announced yesterday, actually, at LinuxCon. The slides are available, and I will have the link on the show notes later. But OpenZFS, for those who don't know, ZFS, of course, came from Sun, was a part of Solaris, and then when Oracle gobbled them up, they decided, we're taking that back, and we're not going to contribute or open source any bits. So OpenZFS is a collaboration between FreeBSD, Linux, Lumos. I mean, they even mentioned Mac OS X ports. Would you say SmartOS as well?
Forked from Lumos or something.
Yeah, so all these projects are going to be working together on the open source version of ZFS, and that's what the announcement was yesterday. And you can find out more details about that at open-zfs.org. One of the cool things they mentioned is they're going to be doing an office hours where you can actually go and ask an expert during certain times a day on various chat or different methods of getting hold of people. But it'd be helpful for other developers who are doing porting.
Yeah. And the other goal of the Open ZFS project is to reduce the differences between the various implementations of ZFS so that, you know, if you use ZFS on Linux and then you go to use ZFS on FreeBSD, the user-facing side is the same, right? You want the commands to have the same switches and so on. And also, you want to be able to just pull the disks out of a Linux machine and be able to import that pool on a FreeBSD machine. And so that's why they have come up with systems like feature flags and switching the version to V5000 so that everybody's ZFS is the same.
That's actually really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that project progress. And I know Matt Ahrens is going to be out at EuroBSDCon again next week, one of the daddies of ZFS itself. So that's going to be cool to get a chance to talk to him.
And the next story is
so what have we got next
FreeBSD up? 10 current has actually been tagged as FreeBSD Alpha 1. Working towards a release date for 10.0 release scheduled for like November 24th or something very, very aggressive. So they've actually released Alpha 1. Actually, Alpha 2 was tagged this morning. And it's once that gets up to the FTP mirrors, probably tomorrow, people will be able to grab that.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, that's a great way if you want to start testing out some of the new drivers, features, the iSCSI initiator we mentioned earlier. A lot of good new stuff coming in 10. It's going to be a big deal.
Beehive is in there. The kernel implementation of Fuse so that you can use Fuse modules without the as big a performance hit. I don't know. There's a huge list. There's a...
I'd say the ATI or AMD KMS stuff is in there as well. I mean, a lot of good
MapIO stuff, and all kinds of performance increments.
VertIO. Yeah. I mean, come on. What's not to like? There's everything in this.
So yeah, there's a link to the FreeBSD wiki where they have the What's New in FreeBSD 10 page, which has a ton of stuff.
Very much looking forward to that release. So next up, September issue of BSD Magazine is now available, and it's in digital form. So of course you can grab it from their website, bsdmag.org. It's a monthly online magazine about all things BSD. This month actually has an article that I wrote in there about PEFS, the encryption system that we're using, PCBSD. And there's a number of bunch of other topics about Midnight BSD Live CDs. We got server maintenance, how to repurpose a Mac Mini into a wireless access point with OpenBSD, server modding, FreeBSD programming, and a brief introduction to ZFS. So a lot of good articles. Please check it out. You won't be sorry.
And also, the FreeBSD IRC channel on Freenode is now official. For quite a long time, the channel was unofficial because the official channel was reserved exclusively for the FreeBSD Foundation, who didn't really have much interest in IRC. But now it's official, so the FreeBSD channel on Freenode has one hash instead of two in front of it. And they've set up a redirect so that you won't have to reconfigure your client or anything.
So does that change anything about the channel? Like who's hanging out in there or not?
If it's just one day something happened.
Okay.
And a lot of people were wondering, why did it change all of a sudden? So we thought we'd mention it.
Next up, we got OpenSSH 6.3 was released. So after a little bit of a delay here, Damian Miller has announced the release of 6.3. So what's different in this one, Alan?
It's mostly just a bug fix release, and there's a few new features. Specifically, if you're using SFTP to transfer files, you can now actually resume a failed download using the minus A for a flag.
That's helpful. That's
one of the only things from FTP that it didn't support, and I've always wondered why, and now
wonder no longer. Yeah. We have it.
So now we have it, so I don't have to wonder anymore.
Okay. Excellent. Well, that brings us to the end of our rapid-fire news. Next up, we have some questions from you, the audience. Next up, guys, we've got our feedback and questions section where you go ahead and write us your questions and we'll do our best to answer as many of them as we can. What's the first question we got here, Alan?
The first question comes in from James, and he says he loved the first show and excited to see more. And he was asking me for a while now, I've been convincing him to use BSD for server applications, and because it offers the more end-to-end unified consistent system and so on. So he's been interested in moving things over to BSD, but he's having some problems with the breadth of what Linux offers. And so he's wondering about, you know, will applications developed for Linux work on BSD? And I'd say most of them would. Basically, any program that's written in any semblance of portability will work. The FreeBSD ports tree has 25,000 applications in it. And most of those work with little to minor changes. I think most of the times the changes the port tree makes are just to make the files go in the right places in BSD rather than to actually change the application. And then in addition to that, the Linuxulator allows you to run Linux binaries out of the box, which is quite handy when you have to use a commercial application where they only provide a binary for Linux. For example, Skype or a lot of game servers or things like MATLAB.
Flash
is a good example.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's very, very few things that require you to... Or there's very few things that will not work on BSD if they work on Linux.
Next up, we have Elias wrote in this last week. His question: I have considered switching my desktop from Linux Mint to PC BSD or BSD. I've heard some of the advantages of FreeBSD, such as no shared libraries and ZFS, but what are the disadvantages of FreeBSD and PC BSD compared to Linux? Well, first of all, the ZFS is true, yes. The no shared library thing is a PC BSD feature with our PBI package management system, and there's a lot of info out on the net about that, so if you just Google it, I'm sure you'll have more than you care to read about. But on the disadvantage side, it's based on FreeBSD, which means we have the same weaknesses on PCBSD that you'd have running a FreeBSD desktop. So drivers would be the number one thing. Good example right now, we have great NVIDIA drivers because NVIDIA provides them. We have pretty good Intel stuff, but the AMD stuff had been lacking for a long time. And with 10, that'll start changing, and we're starting to get synced back up again with the AMD drivers for Xorg. So that's usually what it's going to boil down to. Most people, if you threw that on their system and didn't show them the PCBSD logo, they would think it was a Linux desktop because you can be running KDE or GNOME or XFCE, LXDE, pretty much all the same packages, Firefox, Chrome, OpenOffice, etc. So at first glance, it may not appear to be a different OS, but when you start digging into it, you'll see the differences pretty quick. And of course, having ZFS under the hood is fantastic and makes a ton of sense even on lower end laptops and desktops.
Yeah. So, like you said, I think most people wouldn't, most novice Linux users probably wouldn't notice a difference if you sat them down at the machine and didn't tell them that it was BSD instead of Linux.
Sure. It would just, same utilities they've been using before. So what's the difference, right?
So our next feedback was from Gabor, and he says, thanks for the excellent initiative. I hope BSD Now will keep running for a very long time. But since you called for BVAC on the show, he's got an idea for improvement. He suggests that we get a green screen and apply effects and so on. On my other podcast, TechSnap, the host has a green screen and set it up, but it's actually quite difficult to do. And even just getting a solid background and lighting it properly is quite a feat.
So there's doing it, and then there's doing it right, I think, is what you're trying to say.
On top of that, yeah. So just doing it is hard enough, and doing it right is even worse. And, who doesn't want to look at the fancy posters behind Chris?
That's right. Some cool limited edition BSD posters.
I have one of those, too. I paid,
Put yours
quite
up.
A bit of money for it at BSD Canon Charity Auction.
Yeah, wasn't that your first year there? And I think Dan was auctioning stuff off at the end. I forget how much you spent on that.
It's my second time, but yeah. Last year I got a very water bottle. Although somebody else ended up paying more for the cardboard box that water bottle came in. But it's a charity auction, so that's okay.
Yeah, it's all for a good cause. Well, one of the possibly coolest feedback we've gotten so far is Baptiste, the leader of the FreeBSD Ports Management Team, author of Podre, PackageNG, has put up the BSD Now Podre tutorial on his official documentation. So thank you very much, Baptiste. That is quite cool.
He's like, wow, that was good. So I'm going to share that with everybody. So that was great.
Mm-hmm. So, and as usual, we always want feedback, especially tutorial ideas, show topics, things you'd like to see us address in our weekly show here. And before we get going, first of all, I got to give a big thanks to TJ, for our show writer, for writing most of the show notes, tutorials, as well as handling a lot of your feedback. If you've sent anything in, you've probably gotten a reply back from him.
And just a reminder that the tutorial, in the full version of the tutorial, which I went through kind of quickly, but there's quite a bit to it with more background and explanation, will be posted on our website at bsdnow.tv in the tutorial section.
Okay. And keep your questions coming. If you have comments, other show ideas, topics, please send them over to feedback@bsdnow.tv. We don't necessarily check YouTube comments, JB comments, Reddit, etc. So if you want us to see it, please send it via email, the preferred way, or we do watch the Twitter feed, which is on the BSD Now site as well. And as usual, watch live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time.
1800 UTC.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, thank you guys so much for watching this week. It's been a lot of fun. Alan, any closing thoughts before we get going?
See you next week.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, looking forward to it. Thank you guys so much for watching.